Imagine you're driving down the highway at like 80 miles an hour and you rely completely on your dashboard, right?
Right. Yeah.
Like the speedometer tells you your speed, the temperature gauge says the engine is cool, the warning lights let you know if something's about to go wrong. You just have this, this absolute expectation of truth from those instruments.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the only way you can safely operate the vehicle. You trust the telemetry and you're making these split-second decisions based on it.
Exactly. But imagine if suddenly the dashboard itself was compromised. So the all clear light actually means your engine is about to explode and the check engine light is like blaring constantly for something as minor as a loose gas cap.
Oh, man.
You're
Yeah.
just flying blind at highway speeds because the metrics you rely on are actively lying to you.
Right, and that represents a total breakdown of trust in your instruments. And in the cybersecurity world, when your core metrics fail like that, I mean, that is when the most catastrophic damage happens.
Which honestly sets the stage perfectly for our mission today. So, welcome to the deep dive. We've got a custom-tailored Cyber Mornings daily briefing format for you today.
Yeah, we're really trying to cut through the noise.
Right, because the goal is to cut through all that overwhelming noise of this week's security alerts and, deliver a really concise briefing on the three most critical stories of the day. We are focusing entirely on practical impact and clear takeaways for you.
And that's so important because the noise level in the industry right now is just deafening. It's getting like harder and harder to separate the signal from the static.
It really is. And the overarching theme across our stack of sources today is exactly that dashboard scenario we just talked about. It's this complete breakdown of traditional security metrics.
Yeah, the stuff we used to rely on.
Exactly. We're going to look at why severity scores are failing us, why patching isn't always enough anymore, and why these, certified safe software supply chains are currently being weaponized. So, okay, let's unpack this. We're starting with Microsoft, and this month is, well, I mean, it's a massive record breaker.
It's huge. Microsoft just shipped its largest patch Tuesday on record. I mean, we are looking at 622 flaws.
622. I mean, just to put that in context for you listening, that is more than triple their previous high from June, which, hovered around 200.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable jump.
It's wild. And out of those 622, the zero-day initiative counted 95 remote code execution bugs, but the absolute priority, like the ones that are actively being exploited in the wild as we speak, are just 2 zero-days.
Right. And here is where that dashboard analogy really comes into play. Because neither of those two actively exploited 0 days are remote code execution flaws.
Which just feels completely backward.
Yeah.
Usually RCE is the big red flashing light on the dashboard.
Exactly.
It's the metric that makes everyone just drop what they're doing.
But these two are, quote unquote, just elevation of privilege bugs. So we have CVE 2026-561-64 in on-premises SharePoint server, and CVE 2026-561-55 in Active Directory Federation Services, or ADFS.
Right. And when you have a 600-item to-do list and a huge chunk of it is marked critical by traditional metrics, it's like a fire alarm that just never turns off.
Yeah, it becomes white noise.
Exactly. The severity label essentially stops sorting anything. A CVSS score is totally useless when the volume is this high.
What's fascinating here is why these specific 0 days matter so much mechanically, despite having those mid-tier severity scores. I mean, let's look at ADFS for a second.
Okay.
That is the server that acts as the identity provider. It literally signs the tokens for all your state trusts. You
Yeah.
can think of it as like the passport office for your entire corporate network.
So if someone gets in there.
Right. If an attacker is already authenticated, say with just a low-level employee account they compromised, and they use this flaw to elevate privileges locally on the ADFS server, they now control the passport office. Yeah, they can mint a golden ticket to go literally anywhere. So a flaw labeled local on the ADFS host demands, I mean, significantly more attention than that local label suggests.
That makes a lot of sense. And the SharePoint bug is equally alarming, actually. Our sources note it lets an unauthenticated attacker escalate privileges over the network.
Right, no credentials needed at all.
None. No user interaction required either. And Google's Flare team and Mandiant found this one, which, heavily implies they discovered it during an active incident response engagement.
Yeah, they caught it in the wild.
Yeah.
And SharePoint is the company document store, right? It's
Yeah.
where all the sensitive data lives. And it has been an absolute magnet for attackers ever since, like, the tool shell chain tore through servers back in 2025.
Right, I remember that.
So if you run self-hosted SharePoint, patching this isn't optional. Plus, there is a second clock ticking for you because SharePoint Server 2016 and 2019 have reached the end of extended support today.
Oh, wow, today.
Today. There is no paid extended security update program to fall back on here. You were just exposed.
Okay, the sources did mention a mitigation for SharePoint, right? Like enabling AMSI in full mode on the server can blunt the attack. But I just keep coming back to the sheer volume.
The 622 bugs.
Yeah. July is historically a very light month for Microsoft, so why this sudden explosion?
Well, Microsoft actually warned the industry about this like 5 days early. They're using AI to uncover more issues internally now. They have this multi-model agentic scanning system called MDSH.
MDSH, right.
And in May, MDSH found 16 bugs completely by itself. We don't know exactly how many of July's 622 came from that automated pipeline, but I mean, it's clear AI is driving this unprecedented volume.
But automation is a double-edged sword, right? I mean, if AI is writing these patches faster, it stands to reason the attackers are using AI to tear them apart just as quick.
Oh, absolutely. Once Microsoft ships a patch, attackers can immediately use their own automated systems to, like, diff the new patch against the old build.
It's just comparing the code.
Exactly. They compare the code, find the exact bug the patch closes, and they build a working exploit before most IT shops have even finished testing the update.
That is terrifying.
It is. That old luxury of a wait-a-week cushion to see if a patch breaks anything, it's gone. The timeline has shrunk to what we basically call Exploit Wednesday.
So for you listening right now, the practical impact is you cannot wait for CISA's known exploited vulnerabilities catalog, you know, the KEV, to update. Because as of the writing of our sources, neither of these Microsoft Zero Days were even on the KEV.
Right, they lag behind.
So you have to prioritize by what is actively exploited in the wild, using Microsoft's own exploited flags, not by the CVSS score.
Exactly. And before anyone rushes to just hit update all, we have to talk about the RC4 warning that's buried in this update.
Yes, the 2 a.m. pager alert just waiting to happen.
Seriously. So this July update finishes Microsoft's multi-year Kerberos RC4 hardening. Kerberos is the protocol Windows uses for authentication, and RC4 is this ancient, super weak encryption cipher.
Right.
So Microsoft is finally forcing the modern AES standard. And to do this, they are removing the rollback switch that admins have leaned on since January.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. If you have any legacy service account in your environment that still requests RC4 Kerberos tickets, it will fail authentication the moment this update lands.
It just breaks with no warning.
No warning at all. Now, it won't get you breached, but it will absolutely take down your core services.
Right.
So you absolutely must audit first using the RC4 audit events Microsoft added to the event viewer back in January. Then rotate the passwords on those flagged accounts so Windows is forced to generate modern AES keys for them. And then, and only then, you apply the patch.
Okay, so Microsoft's internal infrastructure is essentially buckling under this AI-driven volume. But you can't even begin to triage internal bugs if the very appliances meant to keep the noise out are compromised.
Right.
And that's exactly what's happening at the edge of the network right now.
Yeah, we're looking at SonicWall Secure Mobile Access, or SMA, 1000 series appliances. There are 2 zero days being actively exploited in the wild right now.
And these have some serious scores attached to them, unlike the Microsoft ones. We have CVE-2026-15409, which is a perfect 10.0 CVSS server-side request forgery, and CVE-2026-15410, which is a 7.2 post-authentication code injection that lets an attacker execute arbitrary operating system commands as an administrator.
Yeah, and we really need to look at how that 10.0 SSRF actually works to understand the danger here.
Okay.
Server-side request forgery on an edge appliance means an unauthenticated remote attacker can send a payload to your public-facing firewall, and that payload forces the firewall to make a request to your internal network on the attacker's behalf.
Wow, so they're using your own front door as a proxy.
Exactly. They use it as a proxy to map out and attack your internal servers. And CIS isn't waiting around on this one. They've already added it to the KEV catalog with a mandatory fix date for federal agencies of July 17th, 2026.
So I have a question on behalf of the listeners here. If patching is just putting tape on a broken window while the burglar is, you know, already hiding in your closet, that implies we need to go room by room, or I guess log by log, before we do anything else. Did the sources highlight exactly where these attackers are hiding?
Yes, and that is a great analogy. You need to pull your logs immediately into a forensic account. You have to assume they are already inside the closet.
Right.
So start with your extraaccess.log. You are hunting for requests to AppleLogin or a Pillagout that returned a 200 HTTP status code.
Okay, need some clarity on that. A 200 HTTP status just means the web request was successful, right? It just means, okay, why is a normal successful login an indicator that the appliance is compromised?
It's because of where that 200 status is showing up. The extra-backsys.log normally just handles front-end proxy traffic. Under normal operations, those specific API login URIs shouldn't be returning a 200 success at that layer.
Ah, I see.
If they are, it means the attacker has bypassed the normal authentication flow entirely and hit the backend directly. It simply shouldn't succeed there. Also, in that exact same log, you need to look for a request to Sproxy with suspicious host parameters returning a 101 HTTP status.
Okay, a 101 status is a protocol switch, right? Like moving from standard web traffic to WebSockets.
Exactly, which tells you a persistent two-way connection has likely been established by the attacker. You also need to check your ctrl-service.log for hotfix rollbacks that have path traversal names.
Meaning they have all those ../ trying to like access restricted directories?
Yes. And finally, check the varley-boot-at-conf.json file. If it contains routes for AppleLogin or logout, you have a massive problem. Those routes simply do not exist in the legitimate configuration of the appliance.
They were written there by the attacker.
Exactly.
So let's say you do the hunt and you find one of those indicators of compromise. Like you see the 200 status on the API login.
Mm-hmm.
What's the protocol then?
Then the worst case protocol kicks in. If you find these IOCs, applying the patch is totally useless.
Useless.
Completely. Because the attacker already has persistent access to the underlying operating system. You must completely re-image physical appliances or redeploy virtual ones from scratch.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you have to change every single user and administrator password. And you must completely reset all time-based one-time password tokens.
So you essentially have to brain it down and build it back up from the ashes.
You do. If they've executed code as an administrator on your Edge device, you have zero trust in that appliance's integrity. The whole foundation is compromised.
Well, tearing down and rebuilding perimeter devices is a nightmare scenario. But, you know, at least you know the Sonic Wall is a target. What scares me more is the third briefing today, the async API supply chain attack. Because this threat bypasses the perimeter completely. I mean, it's being rubber stamped and invited in by your own internal tools.
Yeah, this is a textbook example of weaponized trust. We are talking about four NPM packages in the async API namespace. These packages were compromised and used to distribute a highly sophisticated multi-stage botnet loader called Miasma.
And the technical sophistication of this Miasma payload is just staggering. The sources say the poisoned packages download an encrypted second stage payload from IPFS, which is the interplanetary file system.
Right.
It drops a JavaScript loader called SyncJS, and this framework bundles 744 modules.
It's massive. And it communicates using six independent command and control channels.
I can't.
I mean, HTTP, Nostra Relay, IPFS, BitTorrent DHT.
Wait, BitTorrent?
Yeah, a P2P mesh, and even an Ethereum smart contract. Yep. This isn't just a simple script. It's a modular beast. It steals credentials. It poisons AI developer tools. It moves laterally across your local network. And it propagates itself like a worm on NPM, PyPI, and cargo registries.
It's just everywhere. And it also goes out of its way to hide. Like, it avoids systems identified as sandboxes. It won't execute if the system language is set to Russian.
Yeah.
And it actively avoids endpoints running security tools from CrowdStrike, SentinelOne, Microsoft Defender, and a bunch of others.
Yes, very evasive.
It even have a dead man's switch. Like, if the authentication token it uses is revoked by a defender, it triggers a directory wipe on the host machine to destroy forensic evidence.
The payload is advanced, but honestly, if we connect this to the bigger picture, the most alarming part of this story is actually how it got delivered in the first place.
Right, and I need to stop you there because I'm looking at the notes on this Miasma payload and something doesn't make sense to me. It says these malicious packages had valid SLSA provenance attestations.
Yep.
Now, I thought provenance was our new gold standard for the software supply chain. It's supposed to be the, you know, cryptographic proof that a package is safe and built by the official source. So how can a multi-stage botnet loader carry a valid certified safe stamp? Did they steal the cryptographic signing keys?
No, and that's what exposes a massive blind spot in how the industry measures supply chain trust. Security researcher Rohan Prabhu pointed this out in our sources. This was a CI/CD pipeline compromise. It bypassed the keys entirely.
Okay, CI/CD meaning continuous integration and continuous deployment, the automated system that builds the software.
Exactly. The attackers did not steal an NPM token to upload this malware. What they did was push malicious code commits directly to the repository using a placeholder Git identity. Then they simply let the repository's legitimate GitHub Actions workflow build the code and publish it.
Oh my God. So the official trusted build server built the malware.
Yes. They used NPM's GitHub OIDC Trusted Publisher integration. The system worked exactly as designed.
Wow.
The build server saw the code, built it, cryptographically signed it, and published it. The SLSA provenance attestation is perfectly valid because it proves that the authorized workflow produced the package.
But it doesn't prove that the human who triggered the commit wasn't malicious.
Exactly. Provenance does not protect you against a compromised push credential. It just proves the machine did what it was told. The certified safe metric verified the factory was legitimate, but it totally ignored that a saboteur had slipped the bomb onto the assembly line.
That is wild. And it's incredibly stealthy on the developer's machine too, right? Because usually, malicious NPM packages try to run their payload immediately upon installation using scripts in the package.json file.
Right, the traditional pre-install or post-install scripts. We've been trained to look for those. Security scanners flag them instantly now.
But this attack doesn't use them at all.
There are no install scripts anywhere. This dropper fires when the poisoned module is actually called using the require command during the normal use of the generator. It literally waits patiently until a build or CI job actively uses the library.
So it triggers purely during a developer's workflow, entirely bypassing the installation phase where most security checks actually happen.
Exactly. Which brings us to the practical impact for you listening. You can no longer just audit install scripts to feel safe. If any endpoint in your environment, whether that's a developer's laptop or a CI/CD build server, imported or executed one of these affected at async CAPI package versions, you have to treat that endpoint as potentially compromised.
Because the moment the build job called that library, Miasma reached out to IPFS, downloaded its encrypted payload, and set up shop.
Yeah, and with its persistence mechanisms, you know, writing to systemd, crontab, macOS launched, Windows registry, I mean, it digs in extremely deep.
Okay, well, that is a massive amount of intelligence to digest. Let's do a quick summary briefing of the three critical takeaways for you to bring back to your teams today.
Sounds good.
First, regarding Microsoft, the severity metrics are totally overwhelmed. 622 bugs means you cannot sort by CDSS anymore. You have to sort your patching by active exploitation, starting with those SharePoint and ADFS 0 days. And do not forget to audit your RC4 or Kerberos accounts before you apply that patch, or you will break your legacy logins without warning.
Right. Second, for edge devices like the SonicWall SMA series, patching an already breached box is useless. You must hunt for the specific indicators of compromise in your logs first.
Yes.
If you see those 200 or 101 HTTP statuses on the API endpoints in your extra-backaccess.log, you aren't patching. You are doing a full rebuild and password reset.
And third, the async CAPI supply chain attack proves that trust metrics like SLSA provenance can absolutely be weaponized. If your CI/CD pipeline itself is infiltrated, a perfectly valid certified safe stamp can be slapped onto a multi-stage botnet.
I know it sounds overwhelming, but for you listening, understanding how these attacks actually work mechanically, and specifically where traditional defenses like scores, patching, and attestations fall short, that is the exact knowledge you need to stay ahead.
Right.
The metrics are failing, so we have to rely on a deeper systemic understanding of the environments we protect.
Well said. Which brings me to a final thought for you to mull over today. We talked earlier about Microsoft using AI, like their MDAHH system, to find 600 plus bugs a month to defend us.
Yeah.
But what happens when the attackers point those exact same multi-model AI agents at those patches the very minute they drop? We're entering an era where AI defenders and AI attackers are fighting at machine speed.
The time frame for human reaction is basically vanishing.
So the question for you is, in a world where exploits are written in milliseconds, and the dashboard lights you rely on are constantly blaring or, you know, actively lying to you, will human patching ever be fast enough again?
That is a very sobering question for Cyber Morning.
Truly. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Stay vigilant out there, check those logs, and we will catch you next time.